For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Between the Synapse with Mark Tobin. If you're looking to learn something useful, you've come to the wrong place. But as Belushi once said, it don't cost nothing. So let's get things started. Here's Mark Tobin.
And welcome to Between the Synapse on Voice America Variety Channel. Thanks for joining us or listening to the podcast, if that happens to be your modem of choice. Before we get started, I also want to remind everyone to check out the previous podcasts on my blog at BetweenTheSynapse.com. You can listen to all 17 previous shows. You can either listen to them one at a time, or if so inclined and want to do a Simpsons-like marathon, please have at it. Also, if you're not yet subscribed to receive notices of future shows, you can do that on my blog as well. Greensboro, Birmingham, Selma, Philadelphia, Ferguson, are we witnessing the beginning of the end of the mistreatment of certain law enforcement of black men in America? Or is this just another media carnival that leads to nowhere? Joining me today is State Representative Garnett Coleman, who has continuously represented Houston's 147th District in the Texas House of Representatives since 1991. A member and past chair of the Texas Legislative Black Caucus, Garnett has earned the reputation as a strong community leader as well as a strategic thinker. Garnett, welcome to the show and thanks for joining.
It's my pleasure. Thanks
for having
me.
I understand you're joining us from Minneapolis. You're there for a legislative convention?
Yes. It goes on for the week, and there are a lot of interesting topics.
And is Ferguson one of them?
What's being discussed amongst
the legislators?
Yes, particularly among African-American legislators, because we have seen a retrenchment in fair activity over at least the last 5 years. And it's not exclusive to Ferguson. This is happening all over the country. And those of us who grew up or were born in segregation, I'm 52 years old, these were the kind of fears that we had, that whether it was an individual or the police, that we would be either brutalized or shot just because of our ethnicity. And so we're fearful, but not for ourselves as much as our own children. I mean, we understand that when there's a reemergence of bias, particularly when it comes to brutality by the police, it disproportionately affects our kids. It disproportionately affects our ability to have freedom without the fear of unnecessary reprisal because of the color of our skin. Now, you know, a lot of people would say, well, this gentleman, this young man was committing a crime, but the penalty for burglary is not death. And that's why this, along with the Stand Your Ground laws, it appears that it's becoming even more dangerous to be young and black and particularly male.
And what kind of responses are being generated or being discussed in terms of potential legislation?
Well, I think the first thing that's happening is people are expressing their concern. And so as there have been protests, some people, you know, riots, or unfortunate behavior by people in Ferguson that may have come in from the outside or people taking advantage of the circumstance and looting. Across the country, there are protest marches that are scheduled to occur, because what we want to do is bring attention to this and make sure that we nip this in the bud, because these things have a tendency to catch on around the country instead of it the number of incidents decreasing. They actually go on the increase, has been the history. So I think for most of us that are African American, that we just don't want to see this happening again in our communities, and also we don't want our kids to live with fear. And that is takes a toll on folks, when particularly young people, if they live in fear. And how do I know that? Because I've been there. And it creates a drastic amount of stress, this feeling that I can tell you, when I go through the airport, other people say they didn't like being pat down. I'm like, I'm afraid of being shot. And that's not an irrational circumstance. It's just the reality of the history that I've been through.
And what do you attribute what appears? And I actually did some research. I was trying to discover the number of shootings by law enforcement of black men in this country who were unarmed. And that's not whether the shooting was justified or not, but just as a raw number. And I discovered that there's no required reporting for that, and so therefore the statistics are very, very weak and unclear in terms of how many times this occurs, whether it's increased over the last few years, which it seems to have increased, but that could be more media coverage. You don't really know without, you know, clear statistics. But the perception is that it is increasing. And what do you attribute the increases to?
Well, there are a couple of things. Let's take the Stand Your Ground laws. Because the Stand Your Ground laws actually gave credence to protecting oneself, or anybody, protecting themselves from someone who they believed was a threat to them, regardless of whether they were or not. And police, and I don't blame them, are always cautious about being harmed on the job. So the idea of shooting someone first has become more popular by law around this country. As a matter of fact, Texas A&M University did a study that showed that the Stand Your Ground laws actually have increased the amount of murders in Texas. And so the reality of it is it's a culmination of an attitude that has been promoted in this country in terms of particularly young black men and people who believe they need to use force to protect themselves from those young black men. Now, a lot of us believe, and this is just belief, I have no proof, but that since Barack Obama was elected, the incidence of overt racism towards African Americans has increased. And also, it's about demographics. The fear of loss of power is causing people of color to react in different ways, and a lot of it is the loss of, some would say privilege, I would say of the comfort of being in the majority and holding power. And so these things are coming together to create a challenge for black folks. And all you have to do is be black to understand it, because I know a lot of people can't see it, but I certainly feel it. And I don't go around looking to feel that way.
No doubt. And I would think that there are a number of factors besides one that you've discussed. But you know, police have to assume now that people are going to be armed, because that is the trend with you know, gun sales, you know, going through the roof over the last few years. And as I said, you know, you said these changes in laws, which provide people with more rights, so to speak, when it comes to use of force, so that, number one, that the police are, in most circumstances, going to be more afraid that any suspect could be armed, and then you get into the racial prejudices about black men being more of a threat than people of other color. One question I have for you, and once again, there's no statistics to bear this out, but it does seem to be true, is that a lot of these shootings occur in law enforcement agencies which are perhaps smaller or less sophisticated. I don't know if you're seeing them in, quote, the major cities. For example, in San Antonio last year, a black youth who was about to graduate from Incarnate Word College was he was a drunk, and he was confronted by campus security. Campus security is authorized to carry weapons. They have the same power as you know, any police department. Yet my guess is they don't have the training. And what exactly happened between the police and the youth is unclear. This was an honor student who had graduated number one in his high school class outside of Houston. It's unclear, but the question remains, if he hadn't been black, and two, if the officer had received, say, the same training that maybe, you know, police do now in Houston and other major cities, would the result be the same?
Well, and that is a problem. There are over 2,000 police departments in Texas that are actual police departments, as you're describing. No, they don't get the same amount of training as a major city police department, and the requirements to become a peace officer do not have the same, are not as high as in major city police departments. But I can tell you about 5 years ago, we had a problem over at what's now Texas State University with their police department, because a group of black fraternities and sororities and leadership were having a party there. And there was a scuffle between two gentlemen from rival fraternities. Well, they called the city police to the area, and they tased over 15 people. And the idea that they felt that they needed to do that was disturbing to me. So I went out to the campus, and I said, you know, would you have done this if these were white kids? And who would just as likely get in some kind of scuffle anyway the same way? Then my son, who is graduated from USC, on his graduation week, there were two parties in the neighborhood around the USC. One was given by a group of black seniors, graduates, and one was given by a young Jewish woman who was graduating as well. The complaint for noise at the party with the black, the noise level was the same at both parties. She said it was the same at both parties. But 78 police cars were dispatched to the party given by the black seniors. So it resonated so much they had to have town hall meetings at USC. This overkill, because of the ethnicity of the particular group of people, shows that there is a different response for the same activity when the group of people is black. And that is something that is a challenge as we move forward. So, yeah, it doesn't just go to shooting. It goes to use of tasers. It goes to response to a crowd that is African-American. 78 police cars, please. You know, so the reality is, it taught my son that it isn't a level playing field. And the people, his classmates, white, black, brown, Asian, at USC felt the same way. They believed that was a response that wasn't necessary. So it's equivalent to the type of response that we see. You know that more African-Americans are tased than any other ethnic group. And when police officers say that's in lieu of use of deadly force, well, that ought to tell you how many times they wanted to use deadly force against a particular person, and the majority of them would have been black. So these are statistics that are tried and true, even based on the Houston Police Department.
Right, and I guess the only positive note is that still tasing, while not, may not be justified in those cases, is still preferred to the use of deadly force.
Yes, but if
which is unclear why that didn't, yeah. Listen, we got to take a break.
Let's
stick around.
I'll tell you, if that is in lieu of deadly force, then that means there'd have been a lot of more people dead if that was the criterion for deadly force. There is no way that 400 and something tases meant, if that meant the taser wasn't there, that 400 and something people would have been shot. This is not equate, but it's starting to equate, and that's the reason why a lot of us are concerned about these activities and have brought bills forward that has to do with the conflict.
And I want to hear about those bills that are going to be discussed in the upcoming legislative session. But we got to take a break, so stick around on Between the Synapses.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
If you are interested in real estate in America's largest city or anywhere, be sure to listen for Good Morning New York Real Estate with Vince Rocco. Although our focus is on Manhattan and other real estate markets in and around New York City, we'll have plenty of information that will help you successfully buy, sell, and close a transaction no matter where you are in the world. Good Morning New York Real Estate with Vince Rocco can be heard every Tuesday at 9 a.m. in New York, 6 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
News, opinion, passion. Your voice counts. Call toll free 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to Between the Synapse with your host, Mark Tobin. If you want in on this week's discussion, please call us at 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to mvt@betweenthesynapse.com or on Twitter at @BetweenTSynapse. Now, back to the show.
Hey, and welcome back to Between the Synapse. I'm your host, Mark Tobin. We are talking to Texas State Representative Garnett Coleman about the Michael Brown incident, but really beyond, in terms of where this issue is going to wind up, and if in fact we can take actions that will avoid future Michael Browns. Before the break, Garnett, you mentioned that you're going to be pushing, and perhaps others, some legislative opportunities to reduce this kind of violence. What sort of vehicles would these be?
Well, first of all, we had a package after the beating of a juvenile suspect in Houston that created a lot of challenges, and one was a review commission on the actions of the police, a citizens review commission. And essentially making sure that there's a way to police the police when the police have misbehaved. And we haven't completely solved that, but I've always said that, well, who protects the people when the police have overstepped their bounds, and who is the advocate for the victim when the perpetrator happens to be a police officer? I have a great deal of respect for police officers, and it's extremely important for us to understand that this isn't just racially motivated. I mean, there are police officers of color who are taking the same tact, as you said, of being afraid of the people who are alleged criminals and being harmed, And blue is ruling the day, not black, brown, or white, or Asian. So, you know, we have to be clear that we need judicious circumstances that actually give due process, but also when the person who is the victim is a victim of a police officer, that gives them due process as well for those crimes. So the packages, the most important part of that package is the civilian review committee on these circumstances where the police have appeared to overstep their bounds.
Now there's been Well, I was just going to say that it from the news coverage that I've been watching, it's been mentioned numerous times that those police officers that have either or both of car cams or personal body cams that record essentially every time that they confront an individual, whether it be, you know, for whatever purpose, that has dramatically decreased the number of complaints that have been registered against the police. Would some legislative vehicle that required those kinds of cameras be a potential means of reducing the concerns?
Yes, it would, and that was part of the legislation that was used. Cameras in police cars started because of racial profiling and driving while black, and that was one of the remedies to have eyes on the overall situation when there was a stop by the police of individuals who were black driving, particularly on the Eastern Seaboard, you know, up 95, a drug corridor. And I keep hearing that there's still a lot of, particularly in small towns, unfortunately, as you said, there's still a lot of, let's just say, suspected bias. And that was one of the reasons why on the immigration front in Arizona, the idea that probable cause could be that someone is just suspected of being an undocumented immigrant covered everybody. And that left a lot of discretion to just stop for really no reason. So, yes, these are the types of things that we're working on. And in particular, I have a bill to repeal the negative aspects of Stand Your Ground because, again, it allows the citizens to do things that the police ought to be doing. And we shouldn't put that power in the hands of citizens when they're not threatened with deadly harm. And that's the whole point. And that's the whole point here. Was the officer, and we don't know yet, was the officer at risk to losing his life or being harmed by this particular person? And the jury's still out on that. And I think that if there had been what you just said, some body cams or something of that nature, then we'd know a hell of a lot more than we know now.
I want to ask you, and I know that you've got a run to a meeting at the conference that you're attending in Minneapolis. There was an article that came out, I believe, yesterday in the New Republic by Julia Offie, and it talks about the responsibility of the black community itself. And the article starts, it says, last Thursday, the rapper Nelly went on the air in his hometown to announce a college scholarship to fund local teams in honor of Michael Brown. He also took the opportunity to mock the looters. You know, we don't have to loot. Then he also said that every other race I know plays chess. Black people play checkers. And the article went on to say that the black middle class is largely responsible. This was quoting an African-American person in the article. They turn their back on the community. We have African-Americans with law degrees that are lawyers and judges, and they're not looking out for the black boys in the prison pipeline. They're not sharing their knowledge. I don't know if you had a chance to read this article, but I'd be curious to get your thoughts on this idea that there needs also to be more accomplished within the black community itself.
Well, I grew up in a family that focused on making the community better. And I believe that every individual ought to do something to help lift the whole community and to help lift, particularly right now, black males. And they should do that by voting, they should be to do that by volunteering, and they should do that by writing a check, whatever they can afford. But they should do all of those things. And yes, you know, we're starting to act like everybody else. That, you know, we're free now, and so since we're quote-unquote free, it's all about, you know, me, 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 me. And that's, unfortunately, across the board. That's not just with African-American middle-class and middle-class professionals. You know, that's a piece of freedom. But what people haven't learned is that they're not free, because they're the next person is going to be them. And that they have to make sure that their children are protected and that their children know how to respond to any circumstance that they're in. So I agree with that. But I agree that the whole community, because since we are a collective of people, needs to be cognizant of that as well. And that we all are the people who are raising all of the children. And I think the attitude that that's not the case in our country has left it to where this survival of the fittest isolationist attitude about our own country and the people in it is ruling the day. And that's unfortunate. So, you know, I would hate to say it this way, but black people are emulating white people because they think that they've gotten to the point where that society treats them equally, and it's just not true.
Well, let me ask you this, and I open with this question. Will Ferguson be the quote-unquote tipping point on improving how blacks can trust law enforcement throughout this country, or is this just going to be another incident that we end up paying attention to and then forget about?
Well, there's something going on that people don't quite understand. Because of this attack, recent attack on black people in general, not just kids being shot and this, and the overt racism that is being promoted around this country, black people have been very silent about it, but we discuss it often. And we discuss how the gains that we've made are being rolled back through voter ID, through just these certain laws that are being passed that has a disproportionate impact on black folks. So those of us, we don't run around protesting, but I'm telling you, we're one something away from doing it. Because we never expected, I never expected my children to be in the situation that I was in 30 years ago or 35 years ago. And so we are very concerned, we just haven't reacted to it. And so I tell people all the time that, you know, we're one some incident from a powder keg, and if people believe that middle class or professional black folks aren't concerned, that's who I'm talking to. They are very concerned, and we are very clearly concerned about our children, but also about our country. And so I want to bring that to you to say, I don't know if Ferguson will be, but I believe that this era we're in the last 5 to 6 years and probably the next 5 to 6 years is one where there's a great deal of concern in black communities about our standing in this country and particularly the safety of our children.
All right, well, we will leave it there. I want to thank you, Representative Garnett Coleman, for joining Between the Synapse. I appreciate your thoughts, and I hope that you enjoy the rest of your trip in Minneapolis. I'm sure it's a lot cooler than it is down here in Houston.
It is a lot cooler than it is down here in Houston, and thank you very much. And Mark, it's good talking to you. I hope to get together with you soon.
Terrific. Thank you for joining. We will be back in just a couple minutes.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
Listen for Matters of Design with celebrity designer Dimitri Christian Skourakis as he explores the dynamics of interior decorating. Imagine your personal style and ideas being shaped by our guest experts as they highlight a mixture of home furnishings, lighting, textiles, and fashion from around the world. If you've ever had difficulty trying to plan how to do it yourself, why not collaborate with a designer and wind up with results like you've never dreamed of? Matters of Design can be heard live every Thursday at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Variety.
Ooh, Tanagan!
Are you happy with just accepting and passing along what the media, politicians, and government are feeding you? Or are you positively sick of it? It's time to get the real facts and form your own decisions. It's time to awaken the sleeper within you. Each week, host Dr. Nick Castellano will uncover various viewpoints and topics designed to inform and present the truth. Today's masses are manipulated by media coverage, and we will not become sheeple. Tune in to Awaken the Sleeper, Thursdays at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Good.
Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to Between the Synapse with your host, Mark Tobin. If you want in on this week's discussion, please call us at 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to mvt@betweenthesynapse.com or on Twitter at @BetweenTSynapse. Now, back to the show.
All right. And welcome back to Between the Synapse. Thanks again to State Representative Garnett Coleman for joining us and sharing his thoughts on issues that really touch at the heart of what's going on in Ferguson and around the country. While the Michael Brown shooting has been the impetus, it has really played into a lot of concerns, as Representative Coleman enunciated, that African Americans have about their position in this country, about new laws which are rolling back previous gains, about African American men and their fear that they face all the time when they are out on the street. Those kinds of concerns need to be addressed, and they need to be addressed promptly, but they also need to be addressed thoughtfully. And I am sure that people on all sides of this debate, and as Garnett said, the facts, precise facts, are still unknown about what transpired between the officer and Michael Brown. What does seem to be clear, however, was that the initial contact was perhaps something that would not have happened had Michael Brown not been black. What happened after that, that is for an investigation, that is ultimately for maybe a jury, and whatever other authorities this case may wind up before. But the initial contact, and as it seems to be reported by a number of witnesses, was not something that had to happen. And that's really what needs to be addressed, in addition to better police training, to better monitoring, and to providing citizens who have faced issues with law enforcement, and providing those individuals a route, an unencumbered route, for addressing those ills. Whether though they end up being right or wrong, there certainly has to be a process. Otherwise, we're going to see more Fergusons, and my guess is that it would be more disconcerting in terms of future issues, because this is, as Representative Coleman said, a powder keg. And we need to address these issues now and not let them fester. Moving on to other wonderful news of the week, ISIS, of course, was in the news with the videotaped beheading of James Foley, the journalist who had been held captive for almost 2 years in Syria. According to the person who accomplished the beheading, the reason that it was done now was in response to U.S. Bombing, both by drones and by planes, in order to provide humanitarian relief, as well as to provide others in the area an opportunity to regain territories that were lost to ISIS. And both those goals have been accomplished to a large degree. However, all the work is not done. One point that I think has not been fully discussed has to do with the origin of terror, and particularly terror that comes from Islamic fundamentalist organizations. It's often thought that people who engage in terrorist activities do so because they don't have any other choices before them, that appears to be the only road. They're either impoverished, they've been imprisoned, they don't have the ability to express their grievances in any other form or fashion that would perhaps be much more acceptable and tolerable by the international community. However, when you look at ISIS, when you look at Al-Qaeda, what you find are not leaders who have been suffering in poverty. Bin Laden, for example, was, as a member of the Saudi royal family, was very wealthy. He had been educated. He chose that route because he believed that not only was Islam being not practiced in an appropriate way, but that outside forces needed to be eliminated in order for his view of Islam to flourish appropriately. That's the same as many of the leaders of ISIS. It is not the fact that they are immersed in poverty. It's not that they don't have other avenues to express their grievances. But as with many forms of extreme expressions of religion, it is a rejection of modernity. And that's why you see this harsh Sharia law enacted in places that ISIS takes over, requiring people to convert, reverting to chopping off of hands and other kinds of grotesque punishments for alleged crimes, even to the fact of stoning women who are accused of having sex outside of marriage. It is the view that modernity and their view of Islam cannot coexist. And because of that, they must utilize extreme measures in order to eliminate the causes of modernity. And that could be other forms of Islamic expression. It could be the West and the United States and Europe. It could be Israel. It could be any kind of force concept or entity that has allowed modernity to flourish, because modernity means rights for women, education for women. It means the respect for all people, regardless of status and religious observance. And these are kinds of concepts that are just not tolerated by the Al-Qaedas and ISISs of the world. Now, I'm not saying that there aren't people who end up following these brutal organizations who aren't impoverished and haven't suffered. But it's the leadership of these organizations that I'm really referring to that are then able to utilize the frustration of others in order to have them become part of their terrorist structure and follow their highly orthodox practice of Islam. Typically, if a group of people are suffering extreme poverty, if they are discontent with their government, what you see is revolution. It is not terror. And that difference is something that, that we must appreciate. You know, when 9/11 occurred, one of my first thoughts was that this was not an issue that was going to be resolved in the short term. It was going to take years, if not decades. And though I was certainly hopeful that, that I was wrong, it seems that, that that thought has bared itself to be correct. When 9/11 occurred, my children were young, and one of my hopes was that they wouldn't have to face the challenges of Al-Qaeda's and ISIS's and perhaps whatever organization is going to follow next. But the truth is, this is a generational challenge because it can't be fixed by merely improving an economy, by providing certain rights or abilities to practice a certain form of Islam in a certain area. These are not groups that are going to be satisfied with that. Their goals are much, much larger than that. And because of that, and because of the ability of the leadership, which includes money, which includes education, which includes a knowledge of how the West works, you know, let's not forget that many of these people who are leading these radical organizations attended Western universities. Yet, when they went to participate in quote, the West, they rejected it. And that's very different from people who have never experienced the kinds of freedoms and the kinds of abilities that we have here in the West. So it's not a refusal to acknowledge the rest of the world by the leadership of the organizations. It is a rejection. And it's that rejection which makes this whole issue of confronting Islamic radical terrorism much more difficult. Because it was merely that people hadn't been exposed and because of ignorance, that is a much easier issue to solve. By promoting dialogue and promoting kinds of contacts, then you would say, well, you know, once people got to know the other forms of government and the other forms of expression, that that would then improve their views. But what we have here are people who have seen it and reject it. So the idea of engaging in any form of meaningful dialogue goes out the window. And that's what we're facing with Islamic terrorism right now. It's something that we can't ignore. It's something that we have to be prepared to deal with now as well as in the future. It's something that our military has to be developed in order to meet the challenges, and not necessarily through large ground wars or large bombings, but there have to be all forms of military opportunities on the table. Some of those are small, some of those are larger. But we have to be prepared, because if we don't, not only will this issue last for years or even decades, but it will go on for longer. And that's just something that we as a country, we as people on this planet can't tolerate. If you want to get in on the discussion on either Ferguson or Islamic terrorism, please give me a call at 866-472-5788. I will be back after this break.
Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
Tired of lackluster results with your marketing? Craving more leads in your business? Tune into the Mojo Marketing Edge with the team behind Mojo Global Marketing, Ira Rosen and Corey Michael Sanchez. Winners of the Marketer of the Year, they will show you how to generate daily leads, build databases of raving fans, and close deals faster than ever before. See what's hot right now and how you can tap into it to generate an endless supply of customers and clients. The Mojo Marketing Edge can be heard every Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Join Dr. Linda Iniguez every week for the Shrink Wrap Forum. This show discusses topics that you wouldn't normally hear in today's media. In the forum, virtually no topic is off limits. We invite you to join us and participate or dive into the stream where we value independent thought, talk to those people that are making a difference, and explore ideas considered outside the box. The Shrink Wrap Forum can be heard live every Monday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one Internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to Between the Synapse with your host, Mark Tobin. If you want in on this week's discussion, please call us at 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to nbt@betweenthesynapse.com or on Twitter at @BetweenTSynapse. Now, back to the show.
All right, welcome back to Between the Synapse. We have talked about Ferguson with State Representative Garnett Coleman from Houston, Texas. We have talked about ISIS and the beheading of journalist James Foley. But now let's change it up a little bit and talk about just a few other issues. The first is the ALS Bucket Challenge. I am sure you have seen people taking this challenge. It has been an incredible and just incredible response. I believe that the increase in donations to the ALS Foundation is up something like $20 million and growing every single day. ALS is just one of the most nefarious diseases that people can face. There's no cure at this moment. Increasing awareness, increasing funds for research is something that is of utmost importance. On one note, you've seen a lot of celebrities who have been taking this challenge, but I do want to thank my quote cousin, Gwyneth Paltrow, for her recent post. She is taking the challenge, and I just want to thank her in particular because she did it wearing a bikini. She nominated Chris Martin. I don't know if he'll wear a bikini or not, but if you want to check out Gwyneth Paltrow taking the bucket challenge wearing a bikini, you can find that on my blog at BetweenTheSynapse.com, where you can also find the podcast for this show as well as others. So please take some time to visit my blog. I think you'll find some interesting topics to read. I don't know what goes on in Montana, but a man, William McDaniel, age 53, was a patron at a gentleman's club in Montana. It was called Sagebrush Sam's Exotic Dance Club and Casino in Rocker, which is a suburb of Butte, Montana. Honestly, I didn't know that Butte, Montana was large enough to have a suburb. But in this club, Mr. McDaniel paid a dancer $350 for a private dance. When he did not receive the expected sex from the dancer, instead of maybe complaining to the manager or maybe even just keeping it to himself, he sought to dial 911 to register a consumer complaint. So, first of all, he seems to have confused 911 with the Better Business Bureau. Not that the Better Business Bureau would have been interested in his complaint either, but calling 911, of course, got the interest of the local police department. And after questioning McDaniel, the police arrested him for offering money for sexual favors, a misdemeanor, and he was booked into the Butte Silver Bow Detention Center, which does not have a casino. Though he was released the next morning after posting bond. I don't know Mr. McDaniel, and I don't want to know, but if he wasn't completely inebriated or otherwise out of sorts, it is mind-boggling that someone would call 911 to report this quote-unquote crime. By the way, he also has complaints about the club that he has registered. He says that it's dirty, smells like vomit, and needed a complete makeover. He even said that the stripper pole looked like it was going to break loose from the floor. He said the cleanliness and attitude need to be addressed and that he would not go back. That's what he posted on Yelp. I think he has other reasons for not going back to the club now, beyond concerns about what the club looked like. But, just a shout-out to William McDaniel for being perhaps one of the stupidest individuals in our country, and that's saying a lot. Lastly, before we close today's show, I want to talk a little bit about baseball. Baseball's been in the news a lot. They have a new commissioner. With Bud Selig's retirement, they chose, after a semi-contentious vote, they chose basically his right-hand man to succeed him. Now, whether that means that the new commissioner will move baseball into different areas that Bud Selig refused to do is certainly unclear. There's also been a lot of discussions of potential rule changes in baseball, mostly surrounding the length of time that Major League Baseball games take. For whatever reason, the time of games now runs between, 3 to 3.5 hours or even 3:45 for just a regular 9-inning game. It seems that batters take more timeouts in the batter box. Pitchers take longer to prepare between pitches, and now that we have limited instant replay, that also takes additional time. But that only just happened this year, and the increase in time for games has been occurring for a number of years. I consider myself essentially a baseball purist. I would even get rid of the designated hitter if I were given my druthers. However, something does need to occur that decreases the time of baseball games in the future. This is going to be a very tricky kind of matter because baseball is unlike any other sport when it comes to trying to limit how long somebody can do something. It's not like a shot clock or a play clock In football, the pitcher is doing many things besides just throwing to the batter. He may be trying to keep a runner from stealing. There's all sorts of strategy that occurs, in between pitches that perhaps are not noticed by the common eye. However, for baseball to succeed in this environment, which is a very, very competitive sports environment, there do have to be some changes that will reduce the time of these games. And I'm hopeful that the new commissioner will look at this and look at it very carefully, and that some kind of a new rule change can be implemented that can keep the games to a shorter time period. That's it for today. As I said, please check out my blog, Between the Synapse, at betweenthesynapse.com for previous podcasts as well as a podcast for this. You can learn more information about our guest, State Representative Garnett Coleman, who I want to thank once again for joining me and for his candid discussion on the issues that are confronting African Americans in this country. I want to thank the Voice America team and my producer, Winston Price. I want to thank my engineer, Mark Wigner, for helping out in the back room. Catch this and future shows on BetweenTheSynapse.com under BTS Radio, as well as on Voice America. And check out Between the Synapse on Facebook as well as Twitter. Thank you for listening, and I will see you next week on Between the Synapse.
Thanks again for joining us this week. Mark Tobin and Between the Synapse will transmit once again next Thursday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. And remember, you never know what lies between the synapse.